Everyone, and can I welcome you to the Planning Committee meeting? Can I first of all take apologies for absence, please?
Apologies, Chair, from Councillor Johnston, Councillor Monroe, Councillor Parry, and Councillor Russell.
Well, you're on the microphone. Order of business?
Is as printed in the agenda, Chair.
Okay. Any declarations of interest? Oh, sorry.
Councillor Hardy also sends his apologies.
That's duly noted. Thanks for that. Declarations of interest. Anybody got a declaration of interest? You can always declare an interest on the particular item, if you recall. That takes us on to the minutes of the previous meeting, which was held on the 3rd of October for your approval. Is that approved as a correct record? Okay, thank you very much. That then takes us on to 5.1, which is the town centre presentation by the Head of Communities and Economy, Ian.
Thanks, Chair. I'll keep this as a relatively short and focused presentation, given that it's within the body of the Planning Committee and you've got other business to do today. The remit was to look at how the Council can support Midlothian's town centres, and that was a remit from two committees ago. Much of what I'm going to go through is pretty self-evident. And I'll say right at the start, there is no silver bullet to all of this, but the Council can exert influence and make a difference. In summary, we can seek to shape market forces, but we cannot fully control them. And I think that needs to be borne in mind. I've got a few slides, which I've also circulated the text of, which I hope will be helpful for something to take away for reference. But I won't read out the quote. But the quote itself is from a Scottish Government commissioned report in 2009, which was a reinvigoration of the emphasis on town centres and developing town centres from Scottish Government. And that pretty much says what it is. In terms of how we take things forward, it's about understanding how our town centres work or not, the need to be clear about what role we see for them, and are there particular opportunities, and how can the Council, in concert with other public sector organisations and the private third sectors, affect positive change. The economics of what is predominantly private sector activity are fundamental. Overhead costs, particularly rents, rates, are a major factor for occupiers and potential occupiers, as are the attitudes and approach of major landlords, which is also influential. Just as an example, the nature of vacancies. It is the case that, in some instances, the major institutions who have property may well retain their book value rather than let and keep them vacant rather than let them at a lower rent and therefore reduce their book value. Now, that's a very general statement, but that is one of the reasons why in the past we have seen vacancies in town centres where you have a major institutional landlord. The environment is critical, an attractive space in which people feel safe and comfortable, which is pretty self-evident and not always the case in certain town centres. The threats and constraints which I've highlighted there on town centre development promotion are well rehearsed, but out of centre, out of town competition in terms of floor space which competes with what's in the town centres, not just in terms of retail itself, but in terms of other uses, including food and drink, and also the continued growth in online shopping and online services. What I would say is there is a role for out of centre retail uses, and that is recognised in planning policy. I'll come on to that in a short while. With reference to the wide-ranging mix of uses which is referred to there, then town centres are not just about shopping, the range of shops, including financial and other services. If they are to function effectively, there needs to be a range of different uses to ensure that the number of people and the footfall levels are high, because that's essential in terms of healthy town centres. For the daytime period, generally speaking, we're looking at a role for business, employment, public services and food and drink premises in addition to the retail. For the evening period, we're also looking at food and drink, restaurants, cafes, pubs, bistros, nightclubs, the commercial leisure scene. A significant residential premise of presence can also add notably to footfall and activity in the town centre. This is a packed slide, which is more for reference than anything else. I certainly don't intend reading it all out. What it shows us is that national, regional and local planning policy can essentially be summed up in three words, which is town centre first. and that hasn't changed for a long period. This manifests itself in two ways, essentially. One, positive actions to promote and support town centres, and more of that in a moment, but also restrictive policies, at the heart of which is a sequential test to be applied to all proposals for retail and commercial leisure development. If we look at what's happening in the Midlothian Local Development Plan, that follows the same approach. It encourages a mix of uses in town centres. It uses a sequential approach. It has policy criteria to control types of development at Strayton Retail Park while recognising it as part of the hierarchy. It also identifies the opportunity in the Newton Grange Gorebridge corridor where there's growth there for the potential for a further retail development. And just a word on local centres, which are especially important in new major housing development areas, of which there are a substantial number already happening and coming. I have to say that so far success in that area has been patchy, and that's an area we need to look at in more detail. Just looking at the sort of tools and actions that are pretty much at any council's disposal, but obviously we're talking about Midlothian, restrictive planning policies will not on their own deliver healthy town centres. Of that, there is ample evidence. Defined regeneration areas and opportunities are often an opportunity, or are often a basis for certain action, and you'll be aware of proposals at Dalkeith in that respect. Master planning is equally significant in certain instances, and what's happening at Newton Grange is a reflection of that, driven by Borders Rail, but also an opportunity to improve and develop the opportunities at Newton Grange Town Centre, where, incidentally, of course, the council has a strong position in terms of its land ownership. Rates relief. The Community Planning Act 2015 provides a basis for councils to offer business rates relief, and certainly schemes for town centres have been considered by at least a couple of councils. But the take-up's been very slow, and one of the reasons is that the rates relief hit is on the council. So, in other words, if you offer rates relief on town centre properties, you pick up the bill because your rates, what comes back from the centre in terms of the business rates, will be net of what you've discounted in terms of what's happening in your town centres. And I think that's been a prime reason why there's been a great reluctance to move on that in terms of rates relief. Town centre management is probably more for the bigger towns. So there would probably be only two opportunities, I would think, in Midlothian to think about that in relation to appointing a town centre manager, maybe having a town centre office. A lot of town centres have gone down that way in recent years, or over many years. Perhaps what's now moving into a different area is the business improvement districts, of which there's one in Penicuik and hopefully one going to take place, subject to a vote, in Dalkeith, where essentially there's a precept on top of the existing rates, which is agreed by the businesses of the town, who then decide the way in which they wish to spend that in relation to improvements within their town centres. I mentioned footfall earlier on, and where, in fact, the public sector can make a big difference is if there are council, health services, other public sector premises and services within town centres, because that will encourage what's called linked trips, so people go shopping, they go to various other parts of the town centre at the same time as they will come into the public building, maybe to the health centre or dental practice or whatever. Environmental improvement of town centres is a significant opportunity for the public sector to be involved, and whilst I won't go through all the details, you'll know what's happened in Dalkeith Town Centre over the period 2010 to 2014. What's happening at Gore Bridge, which is getting towards the end of its improvement programme, but there's still some major works to be done there, and what we expect to see happening in Penicuik from June of this next year. Access, parking, influencing public transport, making the town centres the very accessible public transport hub is all part of it. And do some towns or town centres provide opportunities for specialisms? Well-known ones are things like Wigton Booktown in Dumfries and Galloway, but there's also lesser examples where there's more of a nighttime economy, which has been focused on in certain towns. Just to move on to the figures, need to be careful with these figures. these sort of floor space and premises figures are notoriously difficult to pin down and be precise on. But what I would say, it provides probably a useful overview and the some items to note from that. Vacancy rates in Dalkeith and Penicuik look quite high to me. Vacancy rate for Mayfield, I think, is reflective of the need for urgent attention to pretty much all aspects of that particular centre. And the only other thing I'd just note is if you look at down at the bottom, Strayton, that's the retail park, the floor space at Strayton exceeds the sum of all the other centres. It just gives you an indication of just what scale of the Strayton development is. Just to finish off, there's no definitive conclusions here. Promoting and developing Midlothian town centres needs to understand how they work or not, and what are the most effective interventions that the council can offer. I think in trying to get to those interventions and deciding what's most effective, research, town centre health checks, which we do undertake on a regular basis, engagement with those who are actually involved in town centres, particularly the private sector, I think is the basis. But at the end of it all, you've still got to remember this is a market-driven economy where the council can use whatever levers and powers it has to try and intervene and to try and guide development and guide promotion of town centres. But in the end, there's a market-driven economy here. Convener, that's all I was going to say today. It's a very short and snappy one. Happy to come back and do more at some point. But if there's any matters, Peter Arnstorff or I are happy to pick up on any questions.
Right, Ralph. Thanks very much indeed, Ian. And it, as you say, it was a whistle-stop tour round our town centres. But nevertheless, there are quite a number of salient points in there. So I don't think we'll get to a conclusion today. I think this is maybe the start of a journey. But I'll open it up for questions that members may have. And as Ian said, the two officers here are more than happy to try and respond to any questions that you may have. So, right, Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Russell.
Sorry.
This is a report that I've been looking for a considerable time. If you look at where we are in town centres, and I think Ian's right to point out there's not a silver bullet to resolve the problems that are already there. And I think the straightened footfall compared to other town centres actually gives you an indication of why, because straightens are comparatively small out-of-town retail development. When you take the fort on the other side, we're on the outskirts sitting in Edinburgh, etc., there's massive competition. However, my concerns probably more defending what's left. If you look at town centres, a lot of them are relying on, like say, restaurants, public houses, some of the small handymans, the small decorating shops, etc., bakers, etc. And there's now a decisive move, and we've seen it over the last few years with the development of like, the Elgin Hoch, the old colliery, etc., to start putting the eateries, the public houses, out into the countryside. And at the same time, we're watching local restaurants, eateries, etc., within town centres either shutting down or being unable to function. If you look, for example, just along the road there next down from Morrison's, we've had an array of different restaurants opening and then closing, and it ends up as a Pizza Hut. In Bonnerig, we've had several restaurants brand newly opening and then closing again. And again, we're luckily that they've reopened lately. But the reality is it's that competition. And I know quite often when we hear people talking about town centres, they forget the fact of the good services that are in there. And if you look at, for example, the Bonnerig area, where Ian rightly pointed out, we've got 100% uptake. However, I quite often hear people talking about there's no the diversity of shops, etc., but there are many people who've opened various shops, like clothing shops and stuff like that, that have shut back down again. But we're now faced with different applications. One just next to Tesco, there was a pre-application consultation in here no long ago that's talking about a massive retail development. I understand in the Shawfair area, just next to where the Elgin Hoch and Dobies are, which we've seen grow arms and legs. When we first had Dobies, it was a garden centre. You now go in there, it's a shopping centre almost. And you now see all these coming forward, and I'm going to say if we didn't take some action, if there's no some planning guidelines to give some protection to what's left of the town centres, then what we're going to be left with is an absolute annihilation of the town centres. And I think we need to give careful consideration to what we do here to try and protect what's left in the town centres. There are numerous good eateries and shops in that still within your town centres, and if we didn't give them some level of protection, then effectively they're going to end up closed.
I think it's a fair point that nobody could, would disagree with you on. It's how we go about that, and I suppose, really throw it over to officers. Is there anything that we can do, notwithstanding it's market-driven, to try and give a positive effect to our town centres?
Well, I think what I'd say, Gavin, is I've outlined a number of levers which are at the Council's disposal. I think probably the way forward is to look on an individual basis at town centres, because each one is different, and come to a conclusion about what package of levers, what package of actions would be most appropriate for each town centre. In terms of the planning policy position, then I think that's about as restrictive as we can make it within the confines of what we have at national and regional level. So I think the protection is there. I would, although we could always seek to try and enhance it, but I think that the issue is what are the positive actions that we can take in terms of our town centres. Now, in terms of the environmental side, in three town centres, we're doing that, but probably it needs a wider range of considerations. There's obviously the master planning work at Newton Grange. There's the regeneration proposals here in Dalkeith. But perhaps it needs maybe more of a coordinated strategy put together for each individual main town.
Thanks for that. And it might be that what you could do is you could take away today and just start to look individually at these town centres. Do we have, though, Ian, any data on the outcomes? In other words, Dalkeith got cars, money, etc., which went about businesses came together and they did that, their shopfront improvement programme, mm-hmm. etc. But do we have an outcome on whether, in actual fact, there was any positivity as a result of that, in that we managed to keep outlets going that may have closed down, and there's been more footfall as a result of kind of that kind of financial input?
Short answer is yes, because given the amount of external funding that came in to, for example, Dalkeith and is coming into Gore Bridge, there is a requirement for an end-of-term report, which was done for Dalkeith and is also being done in the early part of next year for Gore Bridge, which does set out the performance against outcomes in relation to the expenditure of the money. And I haven't got the details with me, but we do have that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering what work could be done in partnership with the economic development team as well, looking at the potential growth of the county. That's one of the opportunities it brings. It's more shoppers that could be and service users that could be using our 10 centres. And equally, when I look at East Lothian, they seem to have quite a good program for shop local, and particularly around Christmas, you go to Haddington, for example, and there's loads of material and promotion there about shopping in local shops, and they seem to have in some areas certainly a lot of diversity. But that's not just about planning, that's about supporting local businesses and the economic development of the town. And I'm wondering if it's this kind of policy has to work hand in glove with economic development as well.
Yeah, very much so, Gavina. Certainly in terms of the sort of things that Councillor Hackett just mentioned, they are an approach that could be readily be used. Our Business Gateway team see a large number of individuals who are looking to find premises, set up small shops, small businesses. Town centres are an excellent opportunity for them to do so. Probably what I would say is, to some extent, it's matching people's expectations and aspirations in relation to what they can afford in terms of premises with actually availability of premises that they could take up. And that's one of the issues which we're really finding in terms of trying to assist new and growing businesses.
Mr. Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with what John says. And I think that a trick we've missed in Midlothian for a long time now, it's nothing to do with your shop fronts, it's what's inside the shops that makes the difference. You can make the best shop front in the world if you've not got product in there. And I think we have to attract a big name into towns like Dalkeith, Pennycook, Bonnerig, somebody like a Marks and Spencer's food store, and you will get the footfall. And with that will come new retail outlets. People always want to be where there is success. So I think we have to look at that seriously, and I think it's something we should put on the table for consideration. Thank you.
I'll let the officers answer that, but I happen to know that for years we've tried to get a number of the big hitters in to our town centres. But I think, as Ian said earlier on, it's all about the market, and they do their number crunching, and they don't seem to think that it's necessarily viable. I mean, we were lucky, for example, to get Morrison's into Dalkeith. We hammered in about getting something in as an anchor store that hopefully was going to bring others in. And certainly at one point in time, we thought we had, the developer thought they had Sainsbury's coming in there. Then there was a little bit of a financial downturn, as we all know about. They pulled the plug on that, and Morrison's came in at the end of that. So we were happy to take them and put them in, and a good job they've done. Don't get me wrong, but it's more difficult than you think. Because I used to always think, if you get one of the big hitters in, then everybody else will come in behind that. That hasn't been achieved so far. But as Ian's already said, it's the market that dictates that, and it's the market that, you know, these people are looking at. But I'll allow you to come back in, Colin.
Well, I mean, we're the fastest growing region, one of the fastest growing regions in Scotland. The population is increasing. If you walk around Dalkeith any day of the week, there's lots of people going about the town, you know, and weekends it's mobbed. So I can't see. I'd be interested to find out what we've done to try and attract the likes of a Marks and Spencer's food store. Just a little one. I'm not talking about a superstore. I'm talking about something in a place like Jarnart Court or Esdale Court, because as soon as you've got a little diamond there, you'll get people coming in, and they'll go to the shop next door, they'll go to the shop along the road, and you get people. That's how you regenerate, I feel, the town centres.
Only just to mention that, the when Morrison's came to Dalkeith, there was a distinctive uplift in the footfall and the link trips because of the proximity to the town centre. I think Cassie's absolutely right, in as much as for major regeneration schemes, you really do need an anchor store, even in city centres, but certainly out here. In terms of the growth of development, What I noticed going around the town centres is that the footfall certainly in Dalkeith and to some extent in Bonnyrigg is reasonably strong at times of the day. I think in the other centres it's not so much the case. We'll see in Pennycook as the housing development comes on just how that relates to what's happening in the town centre, plus the other strings to the bow in terms of what's happening at Pennycook in relation to bids, in relation to the programme of regeneration that's coming next year for a number of years. But that's my perception of how things are at the present time. But very much the case, if we're going for regeneration schemes, that's when we would need the anchor store.
I don't know why I appear defeatist in this, but when you talk about requiring an anchor store, I don't think it's the anchor store as much as the car park that comes with the anchor store that makes the big difference. And, you know, I'm sure that the footfall in Dalkeith will have increased, but I think it's got as much to do with the fact that it's dead easy for people to get parked there. And I despair sometimes the fact that people would much rather jump in their car and drive 10 miles to go to an out-of-town centre than walk 100 yards up the hill to the local shops. And to be honest, I do it myself. You know, I think, you know, that's the difficulty. It's about the mindset of people who are not prepared to walk when they get to a place. Unless they're going somewhere like Peebles, where they go down, they can get reasonably parked and they spend the whole day walking up, or a substantial part of the day walking up and down the attractive shops that are there. And I accept the point that Colin is making about It's what's in the shop that's important. Shop fronts are helpful in attracting the businesses to come there in the first place, make it a nice, you know, experience. But what's in the shops is at least equally important. I'm a wee bit cynical about where we go for this in the future if we're actually fighting against this massive tide or public behaviour, if you like.
It's just that as following on what Colin and really from what Jim says, that we need, when we've got all these people coming into Midlothian, new people, we need to, while, you know, before they start going out to all the other places, get them involved in Pennycook, Bonnyrigg and Dalkeith, and make it like that's where they would go for their shopping rather than going out to the bigger retail parks. And we need to do that before they sort of begin to do that, before it becomes a habit, yeah.
Okay, we've reached the point where I think it may be that we get the team to have a look at the individual town centres and just come back with a report over the next few meetings so that we can factor in what maybe we've got to do. I don't know if there's anything in supplementary planning guidance we could do regarding just trying to be as restrictive as we can. I'm not sure about that, but if there's anything at all, Ian, it might be something that you would want to just have a look at, and if it's not possible, come back and say it's not possible.
No, that's certainly the case, Kevin. I mean, we can come back, and I think it'd be beneficial to come back on a town-by-town basis, taking the main towns in particular. The forthcoming planning reform, planning reform, which is expected over the next few months to go into the Parliament, I think it's going to give authorities more opportunity to develop supplementary planning guidance and also what they're going to call locality or place plans. So that is coming, and I think that's all grist to the mill in terms of trying to get to where we want to with these town centres. But we can come back on a regular basis with reports on individual settlements.
Is that okay with everybody? And at least it's a live debate that we can have, and hopefully we can all have an input into trying to do things for the best. And I don't dismiss the last two speakers that actually made it relevant that we do have to try with all the new houses to get people to think Midlothian in a way. And if we can do that, then we've gone a long way to keeping our footfall in Midlothian as opposed to going elsewhere. So, you know, we can have that one in mind as well. Okay, thanks very much indeed for that. That brings us on to item 5.2, which is our normal major applications report that comes in. Peter, do you want to introduce it, please? Thanks.
Chair, I need to simply say this is your regular update on where we are with regard to major applications in the system for noting, but if there's any questions, I'll endeavour to help and answer them if I can.
As per usual, if there's any of the members have any questions on any of the items in that report, please ask, and Peter will do his best to give you an update on where we are with certain individual applications. Anything at all? Okay, right. Thank you very much for that. That then brings us on to the report of appeals and local review body decisions. Again, Peter.
Yeah, Chair. This is just your regular update on the decisions taken by the local review body at its last meeting. There's just two decisions that were taken in the report for noting.
Note that. The next two items are on pre-application reports, first one being residential development at Roslyn. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for a proposed residential development at land west of Roslyn Bowling Club, Main Street, Roslyn. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance which was reported to committee at its meeting in June 2017. The applicants are currently engaging in a public consultation exercise, which included holding a public exhibition on Tuesday the 3rd of October at Roslyn Bowling Club. The report itself outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to development and material considerations. The development plan identifies the site as being part of allocated housing site in the Midlothian Local Development Plan, and as such there is a presumption in favour of appropriate residential development. However, it is just worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a plan application is forthcoming. The application could be submitted once the public consultation exercise has been concluded, and the recommendations are as set out in the report, Chair.
Thanks very much. Have any members got any comments they would like to make at this juncture? Oh, Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, again, I said this at previous planning meetings, the impact on traffic and GP services, etc., would be the only comment I'd make at this stage.
I'm assuming, Peter, that we'll incorporate that during our discussions with the proposed developer. Yeah. We'll get that included, John, as part of our pre-application conditions.
Yeah, I'll just note that I'm going to take that away, and as part of any assessment or ongoing discussions of the developer, we'll certainly deal with traffic issues and transportation issues, and internally with the council we do liaise with regard to the impact of house-built non-GP surgeries and other health services.
Thanks very much for that. That then takes us on to 5.5 again, as I said, a pre-application report, and this time in the Braeock and Dinnie.
Thank you, Chair. This again is a report regarding a pre-application consultation, this time for residential development, a primary school and associated works at land southeast of Auchendinnie. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage in the planning process, in line with the guidance previously approved by committee. The applicants are currently engaging in public consultation, which included a drop-in session on Friday the 20th of October and Saturday the 21st of October, and that was held at the Glencore Centre. Again, the report outlines the provisional position in terms of the development plan and material considerations. The development plan identifies that the northern and central part of the site are within a site which is allocated for housing and a primary school, whereas the southern part and a small part on the east of the site are out with that allocation, and they are covered by protective countryside and environmental policies, where housing development would be restricted. However, again, it's just worth noting that this is very early days, and it's just based on the indicative information at present. A detailed assessment will be undertaken once a plan application is forthcoming, and again, the recommendations are set out in the report, Chair.
Okay, I'll open it up for members. However, just to take Councillor Hackett's point, can we include the two issues that he's alluded to in the last report, that is one of transportation and one of the health aspect. Thanks. Any other member got anything they want to raise on this? Nope. Okay, thank you very much indeed. That then takes us on to item 5.6, which is the application for planning permission in Deanburn and Morrisway Road, Pennycook.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of 544 dwellings and associated works on land between Deanburn and Morrisford Road, Pennycook. The proposed development includes detached, semi-detached and terraced houses, cottage flats and blocks of flats. The flatted blocks and a number of townhouses are three storeys high, but the majority of the units are two storeys. There are a mix of 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5 bed properties. There are 424 private dwellings and 120 affordable dwellings. The proposed development also includes the provision of open space, sustainable urban drainage system, roads, cycle paths and footpaths. This site will see the provision of a link road connecting Rillian Road and Morriswood Road. The site is allocated in the development plan and is within the settlement boundary of Pennycook, where there is a presumption in favour of residential development. The site is well laid out with a variety of character areas, a mix of house types, variations in heights and materials, open space throughout, and good connections. A consequence of the proposed development and the housing scheme already approved and under construction at Greenlawn Mains is the provision of a new roundabout being constructed at the junction of Morriswood Road and the A702. This roundabout is scheduled to be constructed in the first half of 2018. There have been 18 representations received objecting to the application and consultation responses from SEPA, Transport Scotland, the Coal Authority, the Pennycook Community Council, the Council's Archaeology Advisor, the Council's Land Resource Manager, the Council's Housing Planning and Performance Manager, the Council's Policy and Road Safety Manager, the Council's Head of Education and the Council's Environmental Health Manager. The details of the consultations and representations are set out in Section 5 and 6 of the report. The committee report in paragraph 8.26 makes reference to enabling works to deliver a safe route to school. The limitation on some works referenced in the second part of this paragraph, Chair, have since been resolved to the point that improved connections can be made on lands owned by the Council. And as a consequence, I would seek authority to amend the wording of Condition 17, Part 9, if the committee is minded to grant planning permission. The consequence of this would be that there would be an improved link to Cookham Primary School. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions and the prior signing of a legal agreement within 6 months to secure developer contributions.
Open up for questions, comments. Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks, Chair. I certainly welcome this development coming along. The roundabout and the relief road were agreed in 2005. That's how long it's taken to get to this stage. And certainly I was getting asked before the election by local residents what was actually happening with this, and I did ask Peter for some clarification for me, because I was attending meetings where people were asking what the position was, and I was able to obviously give them some advice at that stage. This has been coming up month after month in the major applications being assessed, which is our 5.2 in this agenda. And I think the roundabout will make a massive difference, along with the relief road for the A702. At present, in Pennycook, if we do get inclement weather and one of the roads has actually got a problem, there's only one road in and one road out, this will actually give us two. I mean, obviously, it's still no major, but it's doubling the actual amount of access and egress out of the town. I think the housing mix is actually pretty good. The other aspect as well, I'm not sure about the phasing thing, Peter, because... excuse me, I'm not sure how that... I've got a cold, actually. I'm not sure how that will work, because there's... the number of school pupils is about 200 secondary and about 200 primary. And what I don't want to happen is for that to be phased in the sense that some youngsters will maybe cut off in terms of catchment reviews and all the rest of it. So I think we need to actually watch how we progress with that. But certainly in terms of the overall application, I've got no problems with that at all. And as I say, the relief road and the roundabout has been since 2005, so long time coming.
Anyone else? Just to support what Councillor Montgomery is saying, and hopefully Transport Scotland might get it this time, that we actually do want things to happen and that they will lift any restrictions to the housing developers to actually get on and develop the houses out. Because one thing we have had is, you know, people not very happy that they're... It sounds as if Transport Scotland are putting a limitation on what can be built out and occupied. It's not so much being built out. It can be built out, but being occupied. And it just seems to me that now that the roundabout's going to go ahead, we know that's going to happen. Surely we can release more houses so that we can get people that are waiting to move in there moved in there. So it's just, you know, just by that comment. But I welcome this. I mean, it's been going on for... as long as I can remember, actually, you know, and as Councillor Montgomery says, you know, we spoke about getting something done way back in the 2003 local plan, and here we are in 2017, and it's just maybe coming to fruition, and it's not before time, and hopefully public transport can come up Rulian Road and onto the 702. Doesn't take much to extend it from Hill End as it terminates at the moment and comes through there. So I think it could be good for everybody in the area. Sorry, Councillor Hackett.
Thank you. Just wondering, maybe it's a question for the head of commercial operations, but one of the objections, damage to existing road network from construction vehicles, is there any kind of monitoring and check done on that in sort of major developments of this nature? And just to point out one positive comment, that one of the contributions from the community was the site should be developed entirely for social housing. I appreciate that's not for debate here, but I just thought it was quite positive to highlight that there are a lot of folk in our community that do want to see more social housing being built in Midlothian.
Yeah, Chair, I mean, just the general point about the construction vehicles and if there was damage to curbs and that, which unfortunately seems quite common around big construction sites, but the council does have the mechanism to claw that cost back and get them to either repair or fund the council repair. So that's quite commonplace across construction sites, so that's okay. I suppose picking up on the other point, yeah, I mean, a site of that size you wouldn't have for all affordable housing. You need the private housing to sort of to almost provide the affordable, but we are getting 120 affordable housing units, which is good. And I was just final point, Chair, I was just going to come back on a point that Councillor Montgomery raised about the phasing, and just to say that the developers have come forward with indicative phasing, but there is a condition requiring more detailed phasing. So when that comes in, we can work with the developers and our education colleagues to make sure that all fits and runs smoothly.
Yes, I read with interest the Coal Authority's comments on this being a development high-risk area. And I think if my history of Midlothian is right, there was a serious mining disaster just over 100 years, sort of several fatalities. But the more immediate point is there's no reference to membranes being fitted to the social housing or indeed any of the housing here. I just wondered if we could have some comfort that every precaution will be taken in view of the intensive level of coal mining that has historically happened.
That matter would be picked up at the building warrant stage. And as I've reported to committee on a number of occasions, particularly in relation to Gore Bridge, but the potential risk, obviously, because this is a whole of Midlothian's pretty much a coal mining area or former coal mining area, that risk is well known now, and there would be the appropriate investigations and studies undertaken with a view to ensuring that through the building warrant process that the proper measures are taken.
Okay, it's up for the committee to agree. I take it everybody's agreeing it, yes. Okay, right, thanks very much. That then takes us on to item 5.7, which is the application at North Middleton Gore Bridge. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of 34 dwellings, formation of access road, car park and associated works on land southwest of Torcraig Farm, North Middleton. The proposed housing includes detached, semi-detached and terraced houses. The development comprises two-storey houses and cottage-style houses, which have a second storey in the roof space. There is a mix of two, three and four-bed properties. There are 29 private dwellings and five affordable dwellings. The proposed development also includes the provision of open space, a sustainable urban drainage system, roads, cycle paths and footpaths. The site is an allocated housing site within the settlement of North Middleton, where there is a presumption in favour of housing development. The proposed layout, form and design complements the existing development along Balfour Castle Road and its setting within a conservation area. This is achieved by using cottage-style dwellings and traditional materials along the site frontage. There have been 25 representations received objecting to the application and consultation responses from Scottish Water, the Morfolk Community Council, the Council's Archaeology Advisor, the Council's Policy and Road Safety Manager, the Council's Head of Education, and the Midlothian Health and Social Care Partnership. The details of the consultations and representations are set out in Section 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions and the prior signing of a legal agreement within 6 months to secure developer contribution.
Okay, right, open it up to committee. This application was a result of a call-in by Councillor Johnson, just so that everybody knows that's why it's on the agenda, because it's under the number of houses that are that need to come to committee, just so that, you know, to keep for the public record. But it's opened up for members to comment on. Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. 5.1, I could be reading this wrong, but it says Scottish Water doesn't object to the application, but they state there's insufficient capacity at Rosebery Water Treatment Works, but there is current sufficient capacity at North Middleton Waste. So I don't know a great deal about water, but is one fresh water and the other one's waste treatment? And if that is the case, what work needs to be carried out then to ensure that fresh water is delivered to the property?
Thank you, Chair. You're correct, yeah. One is fresh water, one is waste. It's quite a standard formal out response from Scottish Water insofar as they don't often make that formal commitment to supply until development is certainly underway or programmed, and that's partly to do with being unfamiliar of what other developments are taking place at when and where across the district. So you tend to find what happens is the development won't physically start until the house builder has got that security from Scottish Water that all those services can be delivered. So it's quite a normal process there that they don't commit until they know that development's about to take place.
I should declare that I live in the conservation area affected by this. I have attended the public meeting, as Councillor Muirhead also did, but I've made no public address on the subject at that or indeed in any other forum. The Section 75 arrangements here, what is North Middleton actually going to get? There's a question of the school requiring expansion, there's a question of broadband services, and for the more optimistic, there's a question of a gas supply. I just wondered where the negotiations have got to on that.
Chair, there's maybe two different issues there. If I can separate out the gas supply, that's not really a planning consideration in terms of whether these houses or other houses are supplied by gas. Obviously, to sell the house builder wants them to be serviced by the utilities. Gas is often a very favourable means in terms of especially heating houses, so it is desirable. But through the planning system, you can't automatically require that houses are connected to the gas. So that's not covered by Section 75 contributions. In terms of the Section 75 contributions, in terms of this scheme, there's payments being made towards education, that's primary and secondary education. There would be payments towards children's play, which would go to the local park to enhance the local park, and there's the standard requirement towards the Borders rail line.
Yes, and this subject of internet connectivity and also the quantum of the contribution to the school, which didn't seem, when it was last discussed, to be very high.
Chair, in terms of the overall developer contribution, what is proposed is actually a grand total of £384,636. That's the grand total. The vast majority of that goes off to education. However, £68,000 would go to children's play and £71,000 would go off to Borders Rail. In terms of the broadband, it's been a long-established principle of the Planning Committee for a number of years now that as part of any housing scheme, we put the emphasis on the house builder to make sure that they deliver the superfast broadband in terms of the physical structure of the houses and also something they speak to with the providers to ensure that house owners do get those facilities. So that's been controlled by a planning condition on any grants planning permission.
Thank you.
Any other questions on your head?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I've known Middleton, my family, half my family come from Middleton, and I can recall when all it was basically a pub, some cottages and a whole load of council housing. And I think, you know, looking at the objections that are coming for the public on this, you know, to try to understand them, I think when you're living in an area the size of Middleton, which is in a rural location, there's a kind of balance between what you would like to have in terms of services and the amount of development that you have to allow to make some of these services sustainable. And I think there's probably a frustration that they see that, you know, this amount of properties coming, being proposed, yet for their point of view, directly, there doesn't seem to be very much coming to the village. And I note the point that was just made about the 64,000 for the play area. I think my understanding of what's going to happen with that is that it isn't going to be a play area within the new development, but rather the money be used to enhance the most substantial facility that's in the village itself. But I think that's partly where the frustrations and where some of the objections are coming in. As Councillor Smale said, all three local ward members and Councillor Smale attended the preliminary consultations that the developer had, a very well attended a consultation event in the community hall. And I think there was dismay amongst some of the attendees that the developer didn't seem to be aware of the issues surrounding one of the biggest desires of the community, I suppose, is to have gas installed in the area. I can understand the difficulties that the developer has on that, but I would have liked to have seen some indication or some a wee bit more than kind of just playing lip service to this. I think to try to find a way to so that everybody in the village would be able to benefit by maybe seeking funding from other sources to try and assist in the development of that as a potential thing. But I felt at that meeting it was kind of, it was almost put up as a possibility when it's a long way away from the existing supply. I think the existing supply is probably about 2 miles away from Middleton. But it isn't just about the gas infrastructure. There have been certainly complaints to myself and other councillors about the electricity supply. There are, according to them, frequent outages. There are some concerns about the water and sewage capacity. And I understand that you'll not get firm commitments from the Water Authority until it's nearer the time. And that may have an effect of holding things up if it turns out there's insufficient capacity there. Concerns about I understand that this area has been allocated for housing, and under the previous plan it equated to an expectation of about 15 houses being built there. This is an application for 34, and again, when people are looking at that, they're saying, well, okay, we're taking all these extra houses, but what additionally are we getting in the village for that? Their opinion is that they're not getting very much. The social housing aspect, again, in the previous plan would have resulted in 5, which is what's being suggested now. But the plan that we've just adopted does say that, you know, any planning that hasn't yet been accepted, it should be 25%, which would equate to 8 or 9 properties. So there's a feeling that there's a lack of social housing within that development. As far as the school capacity is concerned, I accept that this developer will be paying the share towards the education facilities, but I think, and forgive me because I had a note in here, and I'm afraid I've lost it all on my iPad today, but never mind. It indicated about the capacity in the school. I think there's a requirement for 11 primary school pupils. Now, what they're saying is that the school is currently at capacity, but education have indicated that they would manage out non-catchment area children. So, you know, I would like some information as to the timescales of this development, whether it would be possible to manage out, that's their words, no mine, the non-catchment area children that are currently going to that school. So I'd like some feedback on that. I have concerns about the traffic situation. because of the restrictions with the bridge at the bottom of at Borthwick, there's no possibility of vehicles accessing that site from the other side of the village. Therefore, all the construction traffic is going to go through the village of Middleton. Now, I think it says in kind of mitigation that, well, we managed fine, you know, when we had to construct the school and all the traffic had to go through the village. But there wasn't a school there then. So we're in a situation now where we've got a school right opposite the proposed site. And I certainly would be very keen to make sure that that was all taken into consideration if this planning application went ahead. The timings of the work being done so that it doesn't coincide with the start and end of the school day, for example, things like that. It is a conservation area as well. I'm mindful of the conditions that were placed on another, and I know the developer would argue that it's a different section or whatever, but the same developer applied for housing down at Butlerfield, and we were given all sorts of assurances about what would be put into play from a safety aspect. There was considerable concern raised by the residents of the adjoining estate. And we ended up having to take action against the developer because they started before they put the required safety factors into place. So you know, I would want that absolutely monitored because we can't afford to have ignoring any of the agreed safety conditions when it's such a small village, and in particular when it's right adjacent to a primary school. These are the concerns that some of them that I have, and some that I'm expressing, I suppose, for the point of view of the people that live there. But I would like to hear some feedback on the points that I've raised.
Thank you, Chair. Number of issues. In terms of the school catchment area and the fact that there's a number of children going to Morfolk Primary School from out with the catchment area. So, as Councillor Moy had said, there's capacity if you manage out that arrangement. I don't have the information in front of me to be able to answer the question insofar as I don't know what years they are in the school. And why that's maybe critical is that if planning permission is granted, then there's a build programme, and the houses get occupied and children go to school. You're talking about a time lag. At that point, I don't know whether between now and then those children that are out with the catchment area have moved through the school, so that in itself just naturally generates the capacity. And it's a simple case that my education colleagues aren't allocating children from outside the catchment to it, so I don't have the exact data. I understand the concern. All I've been advised through the consultation process is that is achievable. So I'd have to come back to say exactly what the time lag is with that programme. The construction traffic issue is a really important one. Very sensitive site opposite a primary school. Definitely need to manage that correctly. I think the house builder is more than aware of the sensitivity of that, not just from a planning perspective, just from a health and safety perspective and their responsibility in that regard. I know that from a planning perspective, there's a proposed condition to require a plan from the applicant to help us manage and time the construction vehicles. And we've done that at the St. David's site, if you remember, in Dalkeith there, when that was being developed. We managed the construction vehicles in and out at different times because of the school coming and going. We'd do a similar exercise there. We'd most probably encourage the house builder and the school to have a good relationship as well, so that the children and parents were familiar with what's going on and being safe around construction sites and all the rest of it. So I think from a planning perspective and from the house builder's perspective, everyone would want that to operate safely, and we'd do whatever we could to make that happen. I appreciate there's times where conditions get breached, as you made reference to, and the planning authority then has to enforce that. I know the one at Butlerfield, there was a breach in conditions, so we did actually make them stop. So we did actually, the actual condition worked. It sort of kicked in that enforcement process. We would have to actively monitor that and make sure there was compliance with that. The housing numbers, you're right, the site itself was initially allocated in the 2008 local plan. There was an indicative allocation of 15 units, although the site, if you look at it geographically, it's a much bigger site, could accommodate a lot more than 15 units, but that restriction on the 15, or that number of the 15, came from an historical strategic planning reference to when you have small settlements, they expand by up to 10%, so hence you've got a number. But as we've moved through the structure plans, that figure's fallen away. So it's a case of just how the site becomes developed. I think personally that the site can accommodate the numbers proposed. It's a nice layout. It's not overly dense. It's got some open space. It's a nice layout. So 34 can work, and the level of traffic and school places required from that is relatively small. I know 34 dwellings sounds a sizable development in a small community, but in terms of the traffic numbers, you're sort of looking anywhere between 34 and 68 vehicles in the morning over a sort of 2-hour rush hour period. You know, it's a car every 2 minutes. That's quite quiet. It's the same in the evening. So I think the site can take the 34 units.
I knew you know, that I was going to say I would forget something. The broadband. There are issues in Middleton in terms of the speed of the broadband, given its proximity. I know that, you know, we have a condition on developers to have broadband cable or fibre, I think, from the box or the unit or whatever into the properties, and I see the developers has agreed to do that. But it also says the developer has inquired with the provider whether enhancement to the broadband services within the village are required, and I would suspect that they absolutely are. But there is no indication here other than we'll inquire. There's no really much point in sticking fibre from the box or from the street, if you like, or the main road into all the houses, if there isn't a cable that gets there with a decent speed on it. So is there any guidance you can give us on that?
I suppose the only thing I can really say to that, which hopefully helps a little bit, is that, funny enough, we do actually speak to BT Open Reach quite regularly, and I've had liaison meetings with Homes of Scotland, who represent the housebuilding industry, and BT, about making sure that there's improved provision across Midlothian, especially as developments come forward. And the response I get is that they're rolling out the service wider and wider. As there's more and more houses coming in communities, it becomes more and more of a viability issue for them, so that becomes a more realistic chance of getting the services rolled out. And they're quite open to the idea of putting increased services into these areas. The only thing is, I've got no guarantee of that. This is just the sort of the view that I'm getting from them. So I intend to look at it quite optimistically and think, well, there seems to be a general commitment from the housebuilding industry and from BT, and I even hear Virgin are starting to roll out services as well. So there's an increasing prospect of improved services across the district as a whole. But I can't give you any more guarantee than that, Chair.
Yes, just to bring together some of the loose ends here. So the total Section 75 payments is about 364,000, of which half will go to education. So it's about 180,000, which doesn't build an extension to the school. It might provide a porter cabin. The payment on an average basis is between 11,000 and 12,000 a house. We've heard recently that the standard for Section 75 residential payments in Midlothian is nearer 23,000. I'm just wondering if you've calculated that in line with the most recent policy for the council to try and maximise its Section 75 payments. Beyond that, clearly we've established there is no guarantee of broadband. All you have is an enhancement to the play park, and you've got the payment to the Borders Railway, which everyone has to put up in these circumstances.
I'm bringing you in on this because we're getting involved in an area that shouldn't be taken in public.
So, yeah, Convener, just to be, just to maybe advise the committee, and the nature of the decision you're being asked to make is in relation to the planning merits of this application. It's relevant for you to consider what you feel to be the consequential impact of that development, and for you to decide that a requirement shall be a Section 75 legal planning agreement to ensure that the consequential impact of that development is accounted for by the developer. I'd be a little bit concerned for the committee to be discussing actual amounts of money in relation to that. If members are so of a particular view, then this is a Section 75 agreement, could be referred back for consideration by Council Cabinet, which has been a practice in the past, and as far as I'm aware, it's never been rescinded as a requirement or as an option, rather. But I would just be careful, if in the nicest possible way, to suggest that I would be wary about the committee here, this planning committee, discussing actual amounts of money. I think the principle is to give the officers a position which says we would require you to ensure that Section 75 accounts for the following matters, and convener, if you are so minded and so of view with your committee, that you could even remit that to come back to Council Cabinet for decision.
Yeah, subject to what the committee decide with regard to the application, but I'm wary that we don't want to get into a bidding war about, because different sites merit different things, and I'm just a bit wary that we don't want to discuss that business, given its financial business in the public arena.
I understand that, but neither do you dissent from my analysis based on the numbers that were led by Peter Amstorff.
Sorry, John, just not clear on that. Sorry, beg your pardon.
We were led a figure of 364,000, of which half goes into education, a certain amount into the play park. This was led by the planning officer. We were also established, thanks to Councillor Muirhead, that there is no firm guarantee of broadband.
That's all perfectly reasonable to discuss. It's just that if you're starting to talk about the levels of actual monetary value of elements of the Section 75, I would just caution against that at Planning Committee. That's all I'm saying, Convener.
But there's nothing wrong with talking about the consequences of a planning application and what needs there are, you know, irrespective of how much it costs. And I think, from my reading of the paper, they're talking about the requirement for additional pupils being met within the capacity of the school if we take out the non-catchment or some of the non-catchment area children. Therefore, you know, there's less of a pressure on the council in terms of not having to build additional classes on or anything like that. I think that's right.
Certainly, that was my reading of it. But and in terms of the broadband, the condition will be on, if this goes ahead, that the developer has to provide broadband to this development. Unfortunately, I know what Councillor Mayhew would love to see, and so would a lot of us around this room see, is that's a commitment to broadband to retrofit all the existing houses in areas where they don't enjoy the kind of level of broadband that other people do. But we can't make that a condition. We can make it a condition, and the committee has, in policy terms, made it a condition that broadband will have to be provided in any new housing development. All we can do is encourage the broadband provider that if they are putting a cable in, then it has the extra capacity for the existing houses. But we can't actually make that a condition of this particular planning application. Is there anybody else who wants to come? Oh, sorry, Councillor Hackett. Sorry, I apologise.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question around if the proposal was originally 15, and I think, if I'm right, there were five houses, affordable houses, and that number stayed around five, but it's got up to 34, and what that does around our policy for 25% affordable housing on developments.
Yeah, Chair, it's a fair point. I mean, in the committee report, we discussed that issue. Insofar as the affordable housing provision You're right insofar as that 25% of 34 is actually 8.5, but obviously you can't deliver half a house, so you'd go up to 9. That is an issue that we've pushed with the house builder, but the report outlines a position where, because of the cost of developing the site as such, they're just of an opinion now that they can't actually deliver any more than that 5. So we're in a position where we need to make a judgment on that. I mean, based on the size of the site and the cost of some of the infrastructure and the use of conservation materials for the units at the front of the site, some sympathy with the house builder. That's why we've had to reach a decision. So I've come to you with a recommendation for approval rather than refusal on that item.
Okay, I think we've had a good discussion on this particular application, and rightly so. But I think it's about time we firmed up on our thoughts about the particular application in front of us. So, can I have anybody, whether it be for or against, actually move a motion on this particular application? Forward. I'll tell you then, right to start off the thing, I'll move that we grant planning permission as per the committee report. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Cassidy. Is there any other counter proposal?
Sorry, yeah, I'm genuinely in two minds about this, but I'm going to move against it. I don't think they're meeting the requirement in terms of the affordable housing. I understand that they'll have an argument about the affordability of it, but I think we should be meeting certainly more than the 5 that's being on offer here. So I'll move against.
Okay, anybody else want to come in? No, right. Any other amendments to it? Right, well, I'll move straight to the vote. Those in favour of rejecting the application, please show.
5, Chair.
Okay. And those for granting the application, please show.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. 7, Chair.
The application is granted. Okay, that brings us on to item 5.8, which is an application for the erection of a retail unit up at Fala Path Head, which was called in by Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for planning permission in principle for the erection of a retail unit at Sutermains Farm, Fala. Although the application is in principle, the applicant has submitted indicative drawings of a building being predominantly single-storey in height, arranged around a central courtyard. The site is located in the countryside, where there is a fundamental policy objection to retail development. The retail uses being considered are referenced in paragraph 8.6 of the report and include shops that you would expect to see in town centres and neighbourhood centres. National and local planning policy supports and promotes retail uses in town centres, commercial centres and neighbourhood centres. This policy position was based on sustainable principles and on an understanding that the economic and social prosperity of these centres is good for communities and economic growth. The proposed development undermines this established principle. Previous applications for retail development on this site have been refused by the Council's Planning Committee, dismissed by a reporter appointed by the Scottish Ministers, and dismissed by the Council's local review body. There has been one representation, and a petition with 119 signatures submitted by the applicants in support of the application. Consultation responses from Transport Scotland, Scottish Water, and the Council's Policy and Road Safety Manager have also been received, the details of which are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to refuse planning permission.
Okay, thank you very much. Open up for discussion, Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Just to start, I've met with the applicant. He invited me around the site, but I didn't express a view at the time. And the reason why I called this in is, I mean, as a councillor in a ward that has quite a large rural area, I'm quite interested to hear other people's views about how you support rural economy. My understanding of the building that is currently sitting in the place. It's an agricultural shed that, in my looking at it, was probably not likely to be used for agriculture any time in the near future. So what opportunities are there for economic development, both on this site and in other rural communities? But I appreciate this is just for this application. I understand the issue about the town centre, and you know we've just had that kind of presentation earlier on, but when I look at that, the proposal with small retail outlets, I don't know exactly what's going to be sold there, but I'm imagining sort of farm-type products. I ask myself, well, am I going to drive 11 miles to get six sausages? You know, I'm likely to nip down the road to the supermarket and continue to use my town centre. It's, you know, I'm not the type of, the town centre type of shopper isn't probably the one that it's looking to attract. What I'm interested in maybe finding out a bit more about is it's currently classed as countryside. There is the cafe, there's the holiday units, which are relatively new. However, next to the site, I understand there's sort of three or four houses. What makes that particular element of the site itself countryside? And if, in principle, agreement was given to free that up from countryside and there was no development in the future, could we come back and reclass it as countryside again?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the adopted local plan, the site is identified in countryside. The local plan makes a distinction between urban areas with a defined settlement boundary, which are urban areas and have certain development policies which support development in those areas. Countryside, in this case, has a separate set of policies which cover that, in part protection of the countryside, but also support some agricultural uses, other rural uses. We accept there's a rural economy, and the existing cafe and tourist accommodation was there to support that sort of farm diversification concept. I mean, if you're there on the ground, you're right, there's a collection of buildings there, but there's very few buildings. Then you are literally surrounded by fields and fields and trees and stereotypical countryside. So it's quite a remote area. So it's not even on the edge of an urban area where you may have different arguments or different discussions. The actual uses that the applicant has suggested to us, like I said, have been set out in the report in paragraph 8.6. And, you know, we've just listed them there. So delicatessen, ice cream parlour, bakery, butchers, etc. These are classic uses that you find in town centres, Chair, and that's where we'd like to see them, and I think that was reinforced by the opening presentation at today's meeting.
Mr. Smill.
I think we can all agree that this situation of Sutra is very far away from any realistic shopping centre. So the concept that there is a substitution going on here, not really at all. And the orientation of the retail activity here is towards the passing tourists. They come over Sutra and they see that magnificent view to the north, and it's a wonderful place to stop. And that means that traffic that would otherwise come straight into Edinburgh can now arrive and see craft-type shops, can see local produce, and I believe there will be information services there so they can find out about Roslyn. This is, I think, a huge positive for Midlothian. In general, of course, we agree that the urban centres are highly important, but there isn't a substitution liable to happen here. The existing agricultural barn is a little bit of an eyesore, so there will be actually a visual improvement for us. If there ever was a case to depart from the general policy of favouring the urban centre, it is here, because the rural setting is absolutely integral to the nature of the businesses proposed. It's not at all the case that we're going to find people coming over Sutra desperate to go to Jarnac Court to do their shopping, and therefore there's going to be any loss whatsoever to any urban shopping centre in Midlothian. On this basis, I would like to commend it. There's also another issue, but for those of us who represent South and East, which have an agricultural community, most farmers can hardly manage half of their income from farming. So there's a desperate need for local jobs, and that's what's provided by this type of activity. The population of rural Midlothian is under half of what it was 100 years ago, and I think it does us good to give opportunities for children of farmers and other farm workers and local employees to have a place of work that is nearby. On those bases, I think this is a very good case for derogation from the general policy.
Thanks very much, Councillor Smale. Anybody else? Councillor Cassidy, sorry, you indicated. And then Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to wholeheartedly agree with everything Councillor Smale and Councillor Hackett have said there, apart from the John Art Court remark. I take umbrage at that. No, I'm very familiar with this site, and on our way to Lauder, my wife and I often nip in for a bowl of soup, and it's a beautiful site. It's got beautiful views right over Edinburgh, the Lothians. The only thing that spoils it is a big, ugly building that sits down the bottom, and my wife has commented on that several times. So I think it would be an improvement to the area, and it would also be a financial boon, as Councillor Smale pointed out, that it would bring a bit more income to the rural community. So I'd wholeheartedly support this.
Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'd like to also throw my support into this plan. I mean, I think it would be different if we were talking about a farm just by itself, but we're talking about a place that's already recognised as an area for people to stop on their way through Midlothian. And it's with, you know, we're looking at a very successful coffee shop and effectively looking to just expand that, the existing business and retail space there. And on that basis, I'd view that it can be put through.
Well, Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm batting against the thought that's going on in here today, but I didn't think I've actually seen a planning application that more breaches the planning guidelines that we actually set down. And indeed, he's been in front of this committee, several applications similar, been in front of the Scottish Government, several similar. However, I do accept the point that it's not likely to have an adverse effect on town centres. That's not my main issue. It's actually the breach away for the planning guidelines that are set. And if we want to set guidelines, then I think it's incumbent on us to make sure that everybody's playing under the same rules. But one of the things that absolutely worries me is the Trunk Roads Authority. The Scottish Government Trunk Roads Authority have said that they expect a condition on that we must be able to enter onto the trunk road. And in recommendation 3, it's not been demonstrated to the satisfaction of the planning authority that the required visibility display of 215 metres in each direction can be achieved. The reality is we're about to grant planning consent for something that we're saying that anybody exiting this site or entering this site is actually putting themselves at danger. And I'm sorry, the minute we start actually going against professional guidelines on being able to do that, then I think we're in serious trouble here. There's a clear statement in there by the planning officers dealing with this that has not been proven to the planning authority. And if we grant planning consent at this stage, I think we're granting that and setting a very dangerous precedent.
Thanks for that, Councillor Mulligan. Councillor Hackett, you wanted to come in.
Thank you, Chair. I had a question earlier about if we gave it indicative planning consent and took it out of the countryside area, what would happen there, and could we put it back in again if the planning didn't go ahead, or if the plan as we see it today didn't go ahead and a different planning application came forward, you know, for housing or something else, some other type of development, could we say, no, actually, it was originally countryside, and if you're not going to put that particular retail unit in, we wouldn't be approving anything else?
Chair, I think if the committee is minded to support a development here, whether it's this or another one, it's still within the countryside. You're just making an exception to policy, so it still remains in countryside. So if you grant permission for a particular development and for whatever reason that's not implemented, and you then get some amended proposal, you just make a similar assessment, but the difference being is that officers would consider what the committee's views and decision was as a material consideration of such weight that would then influence an officer recommendation or other decision. But I don't think it's a case of taking it in and out of countryside as such. It's just making an exception.
I've got reservations about the about this going ahead. And just to make it clear that the existing cafe, which actually sells other produce as well, and the 4 holiday lets were actually given permission because we actually believed in biodiversity because of the struggling farmers, Councillor Smale. You know, we do have a heart, believe it or not. So we did give that permission, and that was operated. And of course, what happened was there was an angle about the holiday flats, which weren't even built out, weren't going to work. And as you've heard already, the local review, it was refused planning permission. The local review body went and visited it, refused again, came in with another application, refused, went to government ministers, refused again. And it's about that catalogue of events. The difficulty is that the ink's not quite dry on the brand new Midlothian plan. We just put it through the council the other Tuesday there, and here we are just going to blow ahead right through our own policies, which, by the way, all 18 of us endorsed, and indeed so did the reporter. So the dilemma for me is, yes, we sometimes have to set aside policy for good reasons, and I think the planning officers have set aside certain things for supporting biodiversity, and we've been very good as a council right throughout the whole county about doing that. But this application in particular, I've just got major reservations about it, because I just think it's the slippery slope that we're going down. I'm like Councillor Milligan, I can't get my head round, and I'm rather annoyed that Transport Scotland have actually not come out a bit heavier. When they come out heavy on other applications, they haven't come out as heavy. What they're saying is, up to you, Council, to get it resolved. And our highways people are saying, hey ho, it actually can't be resolved unless you start taking great swathes away. And I remember we had that with the filling station Fordell, yes, and we had the same thing where the application that came in, and they were looking, because it was a 60-mile-an-hour speed limit, you needed the great swathes taken away, and in fact the operation didn't work and the application was withdrawn. I've just got major reservations about that, but at the end of the day, it's up to the committee what you do, but just remember that we've just put that local plan through last Tuesday. I think we leave ourselves wide open to other people looking to see this as the first stage of us actually diluting our policies, particularly in the countryside. But again, as I say, it's up to the committee at the end of the day. Councillor Smale.
Yeah, clearly we're saying this is an exceptional case because of its location. We've just done a previous application where you decided to build in a conservation area. So these derogations do happen from time to time. And I think in this case, for very good reason. The transport thing, I wondered about that too. But let's face the fact that this already has access from the A68. And that Transport Scotland, all they're saying is ensure that the visibility displays are adequate. The argument there is to do with the increase in the volume of traffic. But again, Transport Scotland, having seen the plans, do not have a problem. Why should we?
Councillor Baird, I'll let you in again. No, I'll let you in, Councillor Mayhead, after Councillor Baird.
Thank you. I just want to echo those points. I've been in and out of that site quite a few times now. And I can understand maybe if they're saying that they need that 250 feet of view. I'd like to know exactly how much it is, because it can't be far off from that. There's plenty of other places, even the full junction on the A68 from Fordell that you just mentioned. That's a scarier kind of turn on than this is. There's plenty of visibility. It's especially looking down towards Path Head, you can see pretty much the whole way. And again, it already exists. There's already a business there. So if Amy had a problem with it, they would have put an objection to this, but they obviously don't.
Best of your head, and then I'll try and wind up.
Some of us being awfully cavalier with our attitudes here, I've got to say, you know, none of us sitting around this bit of the table are traffic experts. I would rather rely on what I'm being advised by traffic experts. I'm certainly no in favour of this application. It's a great runway business, like others here. I've used it several times. And I've got to say, I hate coming out of that junction and turning right to head back down towards Gore Bridge, because the cars come down there at a considerable rate and up the way, because I don't think that the I'm now acting like a traffic expert, but I'm a driver, and neither direction seems as comfortable to me, and that's as much as I'll say. But you know, we put these rules in for good reason, and you know, okay, it's an exciting business idea. But I think it contravenes so many or set regulations that have been put in under considerable consideration and consultation that it's just not acceptable, much as I like the actual idea of it.
Councillor Smail, I think I'll bring it to a conclusion now. I think you were moving grant of the application. I'm not putting words in your mouth. I'd rather you said it.
Look, I think that's Councillor Hackett's privilege, but I'm happy to do that if he defers. I move that we grant planning permission.
No, I'm honestly still torn, and I'm struggling a bit about this sort of breach of our own policies. With an application earlier around Auchendinny, it's full of countryside. You know, that was one of the issues that was raised as part of the pre-planning. You look at out of town centre, just down the road from Dalkeith High Street is the Dalkeith Country Park, which is full of shops, sandwich bar, restaurants, and that's outside of the town centre. And this is a bit I struggle with. If we stick to our own policies rigidly, okay, we would do that, but I look at some of the previous decisions that have been made and I kind of think, well, we haven't. And even today that we've arguably breached some of our own policies. So I'm yet to be convinced either way, but I appreciate, Chair, that we have to come.
Well, that's fine. Thanks for that, Councillor Hackett. I take it, Councillor Cassidy, you're going to second it. Yeah, right, OK. Thanks. Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to move that we go with the recommendations, and I fully accept the town centre argument. I don't think it will have a detrimental effect on it, so that's excluded. However, the reality is the policies here, and this just drives a horse and cart through them. And I'm going to say, in one of the arguments just used to support this for Councillor Baird, where he says another junction was scarier, is a clear indication that coming at this junction is scary. So therefore, if one's scarier, this one, and that simple fact that this junction isn't approved and this exit isn't approved to be safe, and that's the professional view, then I think we're in real danger here when we start to ignore that advice.
Thank you for Councillor Mulligan, Councillor Muirhead. Thanks. Okay, right, put it straight to the vote. Those for Councillor Mulligan's motion, which is to uphold the report, which is to refuse planning application, please show.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
6, Chair.
Okay, and Councillor Smail's motion, which is to grant planning permission.
6, Chair.
Aye, right, okay. Casting vote is to refuse the application. Uphold the planning officer's recommendation, which is to refuse. Just as you're going, there's no other business, just to please put in your diaries that there's going to be a special planning committee meeting, which is going to be held on the 5th of December at 2 o'clock. There is an education seminar in the morning. So you'll all be there. The 5th of December. I'm just letting you know in advance, and Michael will be putting in the diaries. Okay, thanks.